This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The best bits of Joy Drive with Em and Warren. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you.
Now, a recent chance find in a colonial newspaper from, wait for it, 1843 may have resulted in the discovery of evidence of Australia's earliest cookbook. And the discovery was made by Paul Van Raak, a food historian whose book, True to the Land, A History of Food in Australia, was published last year, 2021. Paul, welcome to Joy Drive.
Yeah, thanks for being good to be here.
Paul, tell us a little bit about how you made the discovery.
Sure. So I was actually doing some research into yeast in early Australia. Just got an interest in how yeast occurred in Australia and whether they were brought over and stuff like that. So I went on to Trove, which is, you know, the digital resource of the National Library, and I was kind of putting yeast in there. And lo and behold, this book pops up, an advertisement for this book pops up. And it's from 1843, and yes, it's got a thing about yeast in it, but it's a book that I'd never heard of, and it's never been reported in any Australian cookbook compilation. It's not in any library, and yet it's been published by this guy in Parramatta, of all places, in 1843. So I checked it out with a couple of my other food historians, Australian food historians, and they're going, Paul, none of us have ever heard of this book before. It's amazing, you know. I think part of why I found it was the Trove is fantastic, you know, but it depends on it having people who will go and scan the documents and, you know, so it can sometimes not have complete records. And I think a lot of the research on early Australian cookbooks was done quite some time before even Trove existed. So, you know, it would have been rare for anybody to have found this newspaper anywhere. But there it is on Trove, yeah.
Wow, incredible. What went through your mind when you realized, hey, this is something special, this is a discovery?
Oh, I did a little happy dance, didn't I?
I love it.
look, it's got several mysteries on it, okay? So who is this guy, Edmund Mason? Who is this publisher? What's he doing? Never heard of him either. Never heard of this newspaper. It only had like 18 months worth of editions. It was weekly. It was 4 pages every week. And I'm looking at the list of things that's in it. And it looks very much like any other kind of English cookbook of the time, you know, except there are things in it that are really weird. Whoever did the adaptation, and that's one of the mysteries, talks about snapper as a fish. Now, snapper was a fish that was popular in Sydney Harbour at the time. You don't find snapper in British cookbooks, right? It's just not there. He talks about native currants, and it's like, what do you mean native currants? This is possibly the first reference to anybody using a native plant ingredient, fruit ingredient, in a list of recipes. And I'm going, how is this possible? Who is this person? Yeah. And so that starts the deep dive to try and find out, how does this book come to be? Yeah.
Now, have you actually found a copy of the book yet, or just advertisement in the
paper?
Do you reckon you'll be able to?
No. Look, it's very unlikely. I mean, this guy was a small printer. I mean, he did put out 2 editions of the book in 1843 and 1844, which suggests that a number of copies were sold. You know, clearly he thought it was enough to do the second edition. But nobody has been able, either through the article in the conversation that we broke the story in or on any of the kind of Facebook pages on Australian food history, nobody has said, hey, I know where a copy is. And we've even been now listed with one of the libraries as the conversation article and not actually the book. So Who knows? One of your listeners may very well have in their great grandma's old
It could be
shelf.
Joy Drive family that has this book. So let's just make this clear. This book is called The Housewife's Guide or An Economical and Domestic Art of Cookery. So Joy Drive family, if you have this book,
let's find it.
This is the million dollar question. If you've got this book, this would make our dreams come true, essentially, wouldn't it, Paul?
Oh, mate, look, you know, just even finding the references to it completely rewrites early Australian cookbook history. Yeah? It basically says, it kind of says what else might have been out there that hasn't been found. If this book is there, it's interesting. This guy says that in 1843 when he does it, and he publishes it, he says it's the only one of its kind in the colony, which again is kind of interesting. He knows the market. He's a very canny printer. It is, in fact, a reproduction, localized, of a book that his father published back in Britain in 1930 by a woman author called Deborah Irwin. When Edmund Mason prints it, he ascribes it to Deborah Irving. He's either being very smart about lying about the name, or he's just got the name wrong, you know.
Could it be a typo?
And that's how we know. Hey?
Could it have just been a typo, do you think? Or is there some more of a story?
No. He's definitely called it Irving. There's no typo involved. What we've done is compared, because we've only got the entire list of contents, and that's an unusual ad as well. He does the entire list of contents as the advertisement, right? Now, who does that these days? Nobody. Mm. And we compare that with what we saw, what we know. There's only one copy we found of the British book. And as I said, the recipes are practically entirely the same except for these changes where he's consciously localizing stuff. One of the other things he does is he has a whole section on preserving meat. Now, everybody in Britain knew how to preserve meat, right? And obviously people in the colonies did as well, but he thought it was important enough, given the climactic conditions in the Sydney colony at the time, to do a section on preserving meat, because then, you know, the meat went off really quickly. So I keep saying he, but we don't know who actually adapted it. We know he published it, but there is no Mrs. Irving in Australia at that time. We've looked and looked and looked. Mm. You know, so it's a big mystery.
I love it. It is a mystery.
It is a mystery. We're chatting with food historian Paul Van Raak, whose book, True to the Land, A History of Food in Australia, was published in 2021. We're talking about what is potentially Australia's first cookbook. Now, Paul, I wanted to ask you, from your historical knowledge, what was it like cooking in Australia in the early to mid-1800s? Like, there was obviously a lot of distance between us and England. What impact did that have?
Yeah, look, I mean, it was basically, though, what British food was, okay? The majority of the colonizers by that stage were free British subjects, so transportation had ended. But very early on, obviously, well, not obviously, on the first fleet, they did bring cattle to breed, and then they picked up more in South Africa to breed. They brought pigs, they brought, you know, poultry of all kinds. The colony was set up to be self-sustaining within 12 months. It wasn't. It kept depending on ships going out and bringing back more supplies, because things just failed here. The great story about the cattle is that they all went missing one day and weren't found for like several years afterwards, wildly running in the Blue Mountains somewhere. They did eat kangaroo and wallaby to supplement their meager meat diet, because the meat had to be salted. Yeah, you'd kill the cow and you did everything you could, and then you salt or smoke the rest of it. Yeah, and you got pretty bored with eating that. So they did go hunting kangaroos, which of course, and wallabies, which started, of course, part of the frontier wars was about the invasion into traditional Aboriginal hunting areas and the killing of traditional Aboriginal food, you know, making Aboriginal people, they ended up, you know, virtually starving because they'd been deprived of their food. Fish, obviously, because there was lots of fish, and fish was easy for them to eat because it looked like familiar stuff to what they caught in England. Kangaroos and wallabies didn't look nothing like what they ate back there, yeah? It's... And basically the food was stews, roast, and stews, roast, and fry something, and roast it, or stew it. You know? a lot of one-pot cooking, a lot of open-fire cooking still at that stage, either outside the house, or you might have a open fire inside a kitchen, and the kitchen was often not separated from the rest of the house. So very basic cooking, you know. Throw something on a fire and let it cook. And again, these recipes, though, are targeted towards clearly a rising middle-class colony, yeah? Mm. It's recognizing that the women have probably got maids and cooks, and they want to kind of reproduce that kind of bourgeois British society. And to do that, they've got to now look at recipes that are reasonably current in England. Sure, 13 years out of date, but, you know, that was nothing in those days. And so they start to try and think about, well, what's this new fashion of cooking around, yeah?
Right. Paul, the name, The Housewife Guide, or An Economical and Domestic Art of Cookery,
yep.
It just reminds me of a cookbook that I learned, and I know most Australians who grew up in the 80s would have had at school, and that was Cookery the Australian Way. And I wonder what impact this guide had on developing, you know, textbook cooking books down the track.
Yeah, look, probably not a lot. We don't start getting textbook cookery books until the late 1800s, when you start the first public education in primary and secondary schools by women who, interestingly, are women who have been trained in Britain and then come out here and get taken up into the public school system, and they start school classes. There were other cookbooks written by that stage, like 1864 is the first, well, was, as far as we knew, the first published cookbook by a guy called Edward Abbott, a Tasmanian politician. And then soon after that, you get people like Minna Rawson, who puts out a cookbook. She's the first one to start actually doing a lot of cooking with native foods, lots of recipes for parrots. But they are still cookbooks that are designed for the woman of the house, or the, you know, the who is going to be instructing her cooks. Quite often, the cooks were in fact illiterate, working class women who had come out here to escape things like the Great Famine in Ireland, or you know, had got their ticket of leave after being convicts and get absorbed into these houses. So in fact, the books that are being produced have to nonetheless be translated, or the women have to instruct their cooks in what to do, yeah? Right. Until, as I said, you start the school education happening.
Paul, it's all super interesting. Before we let you go, you have, or you're working on, rather, a new series. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So being a gay man, queer man, I long ago did a paper for the Australian Queer Archives on LGBTIQ food influences in Australia, you know, trying to write into the history of Australian food our role in it, which is substantial. I mean, a lot of it is unrecognized and undocumented, you know, we know of the cooks, say, for the last 20 years, the Christine Manfield, the Annie Smithers, you know, Philip Sills, all of those, Yannick Ritsis, the famous kind of LGBTIQ cooks who are still around now and are producing food and are out and queer. But there's a whole history of people who have obviously been writing things like food columns in newspapers, food reviews. There is a guy that I've done a paper on, again, for the Queer Archives, a guy called Ted Maloney. He wrote several cookbooks, including one called All for a French Wife, which is a famous cookbook in Australia. Ted, in all his biography, nobody ever mentions a wife, nobody ever mentions a family. He created the Chesty Bond ad, you know, the lifesaver with the blonde hair. I think he was clearly a gay man, and I've written a paper trying to imagine his life as a gay man in the 50s and 60s, being a host for dinner parties for his friends. And I think what I want to have a look at is things like that, you know, like the gay man, I'm going to primarily look at gay men because I don't, I mean, I will write some articles about where I can about lesbian involvement in those hidden times, you know, the parties that we knew gay men and lesbians held because that was the only place they could meet each other. What did they eat? Did they kind of show off their food? Like the boys, I'm doing an article right now on the Boys' Own Bake Off that was run for several years as a fundraiser for the AIDS charity Bobby Goldsmith up here and also ran in Melbourne. There's nobody else ever written about LGBTIQ and food in Australia, and I think I need to do it.
Fantastic.
I think it'll be fantastic to have all that documented, and we look forward to hearing your stories about LGBTIQ.
Yeah, you'll be one of the first places that I hear about them.
Please do. Let us know. And thank you so much for chatting with us today, Paul. Really fascinating chat. And we're going to put it out there. The book is called The Housewife's Guide, or An Economical and Domestic Art of Cookery. It is from 1843. We want the Joy Drive family, and Wayne from Brisbane, we know you're quite resourceful and listening now as well. We want you to try and find a copy of this book for Paul. Paul, thanks for chatting with us.
My great pleasure.
Catch you later. Thank you, food historian Paul Van Raak, whose book, True to the Land, History of Food in Australia, was out last year.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.